Do you know what my favorite sound is? Emma.
Emma. That is so our friendship.
Exactly. It's you saying Emma to me.
It's also kind of you saying Emma to me.
But when I'm saying Emma to you, it's like, please see me as a human being. And yours is like, stop being.
I don't see you as a human being. I see you as a whole.
Oh, thank you.
Fran.
Yes.
What's your favorite color?
It's probably an Yves Klein blue. What about yours?
I would also say blue. I don't have a specific kind of blue, though.
Oh, really? You just like all blues?
Yeah, like, I do. I just like blue.
Even like a hideous, like, navy blue?
See, I think this is one of the differences between us, is you have to know exactly what kind of blue you like.
Uh-huh.
I just like the color blue.
Okay. So, why did you ask me that?
Color is going to be very important today, because we will be talking about an album that has the name of a color.
And what color would that be, Rose?
It would be red. Today we'll be talking about Red by Taylor Swift.
Maybe my second favorite color. Maybe my second favorite Taylor Swift album. I guess we'll get into it.
Welcome back to Like a Virgin, the podcast where we talk about yesterday's pop culture, but give it today's takes. I'm Rose Domu.
I'm Fran Tirado.
And today, as stated, we will be diving into Taylor Swift's iconic album Red with the help of Bowen Yang of Saturday Night Live and the podcast Las Culturistas. I'm so excited to really get into Red with Bowen, but before that, let's talk about what's going on in, you know, the news and pop culture right now. This week is, in many ways, all about one woman and the emotional chokehold she has on us,
our community,
on our community, and on the world. And that woman is Taylor Swift.
Of course.
Taylor Allison Swift. Last week, Taylor Swift released Red Taylor's version, the latest in her effort to re-record all of her albums. Fran, what did you think?
First of all, it's like 17 hours long, which is such a gift. Long. Such a gift, in my opinion. I mean, even though a lot of the songs are just carbon copies of the originals, I did love what she did change. Like, this song, Girl at Home, to me is like maybe the most significantly different. And I did not like that song on the original Red. And Taylor's version to me was like so grown and a little more poppy. And what did you think?
I have to agree. I really liked the new production on Girl at Home. But really, for me, it was all about the From the Vault tracks. I obviously love the song with Phoebe Bridgers.
It was my favorite song.
I also really love the song Message in a Bottle, which I saw someone on TikTok say is like a song from the Trolls World Tour 3 credits.
That's why I didn't love it. But
I love it so much. I have been listening to it kind of nonstop.
But we have to talk about the film, Rose.
I had fun watching it. I think it's silly, but it's and like very literal. But I'm happy it happened. It was another moment in this very aggressive, like week-long album release cycle, because I think she understands that she has until Adele 30 comes out to do promo for so Red true. Taylor's version. And so she's cramming it all into 1 week. I thought it was a little on the nose that it played behind her during the SNL performance, but I loved her in the red wig. What did you think of it?
Like, that was your main takeaway. Loved her in the red wig.
It was my main takeaway. It was similar to my main takeaway from the Bad Blood video. Loved her in the red wig.
Loved her in the red wig. My first reaction was like, this is messy boots. Like, it is quintessential Taylor to write and direct a 10-minute film about a breakup that happened a decade ago, opening with a Pablo Neruda quote about how he'll never forgive Jake Gyllenhaal. Because, like, when I listened to the 10-minute version without the film, I was like, oh, you know, maybe she's actually not that mad at Jake, and she's just writing it for the marketing very shrewdly and wisely. Like, go off, Taylor. And, like, she doesn't actually feel a type of way about it. It was just fun to write. Because, allegedly, according to, like, Reddit threads and fan listservs or whatever, she was like, you know, in the studio for whatever reason, and they were recording All Too Well, and she just started riffing verses. And the band,
well, I think they were rehearsing for a tour, and she like was in feeling a certain type of way, sat down at the piano and just started playing. And like, and All Too Well is kind of like an improvised 10-minute song that they cut down. And this is now the original version.
And after she was riffing, this, I guess it was ages ago, the producer walked up to her after and was like, and by the way, like, I recorded that if you want it for later. And so this is later, mama. And we now
Well,
have-
actually what happened is that her mom walked up to
love the live fact that you're just letting me spew conspiracy theories when you have all the facts. You're in the Reddit threads.
I'm not in the Reddit threads. She talked about this like on Seth Meyers or Jimmy Fallon or something.
I see.
That she was like at rehearsal in her feelings, started playing this, and then afterwards her mom went up to like the sound engineer and was like, did you record that? And they had. So cute. Now it is what it is. Fran, did you order a Fuck the Patriarchy keychain from TaylorSwift.com?
I mean, no, I didn't. I don't love the typeface, but I actually would if it was maybe designed a little more
for me. Why does it have to have the asterisk in fuck?
Yeah.
Like, can't you just say fuck? I understand that she has a lot of young fans, but like if they're carrying around a keychain that says fuck the patriarchy, like, yeah, they know what it is. I did buy some merch. I bought the All Too Well t-shirt and the red Taylor's version Nalgene bottle.
Are you going to wear it with your cardigan, your Taylor Swift cardigan?
Yeah, I will be. I now, at this point, own too much Taylor Swift merch, so I will be layering it to stay warm during this Los Angeles winter.
I guess my only question for you is, what to you is the most unhinged lyric and or moment from the All Too Well 10-minute version? Or the film?
Oh, well, I mean, not unhinged, but my favorite lyric is, you kept me like a secret, but I kept you like an oath. You know, don't hate that I'm being sincere, but that is pure Taylor Gold songwriting. It is so evocative.
It is definitely peak Taylor. It is her magnum opus. I don't say that even in a facetious way. I think it's emblematic of like everything she does.
My main takeaway was that Taylor Swift will direct a Marvel movie.
She would that. I don't know about that. Is she going to direct the next Eternals? Is that what's going to happen?
Yeah, Eternals too. And she will be one of the Eternals as well.
Oh no, there are already too many Eternals. We simply do not have room for more.
And her power will be something song based.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Okay. Maybe she'll have 10 rings for each minute of All Too Well.
Speaking of rings, I haven't watched the Adele One Night Only whatever, but I did see the clip of the proposal that happened
and
at it.
Your take, there are only two takes from you. Either you hated it and you found it foul and disgusting, or you loved it and it made you cry.
Well, which one do you think it was?
I am gonna guess cry.
No.
Oh, damn it. Okay.
No, so I thought it was disgusting. Well, I hate surprise proposals in front of a lot of people, and especially in front of celebrities. And it's funny that we're talking about Taylor Swift, because this used to happen to her a lot at her meet and greets. I remember when we were both writing together as journalists, there was something that happened where she like went to a gay bar to surprise a gay couple and like played something on the guitar while they got engaged. I'm just not into that thing. And this Adele thing, like, I guess I'm happy for them, but even though I don't believe in marriage, I don't want anyone to propose to me. But even if I did, that is not how I would want to be proposed to.
The gist is, congrats to this lucky couple.
I hope you are very happy together and have many long years of listening to Adele's music.
And after those long years, I'm sure you'll probably cry about this in therapy, because it'll be maybe an issue in your marriage a decade down.
Fran, you know, it's rare that you are caught up on something in pop culture that I am not.
Mm-hmm.
But it is not unprecedented. Case in point, you are watching the current season of Real Housewives of Salt Lake City, and yes, I am not. So as our Salt Lake City correspondent, can you give me the download on what's going on? Because I know the past 2 weeks have been insane.
So, Rose, I don't want to get too into the thick of it, as they say. Exactly. Into the thick of it. Ocean Kelly remix, yes. Because, you know, we don't want to become a Real Housewives recap podcast. However, Andy did say this was a top five episode for him out of any franchise. You know the gist of the characters. You watched a little bit of the first season, correct?
Yeah, and I watched the first episode of this season.
Okay, so you're caught up on a little bit, and you also watched, you've seen clips online, you watched the previews. The gist is the show has become a CSI-level crime thriller that could potentially even supersede what we were given by Erica Jane in Real Housewives of Beverly Hills. Of course, this is at the federal level, similar to Erica Jane, but the Department of Homeland Security showed up with a SWAT team to the production and to get Jen Shah, who had fled the scene basically minutes before they arrived.
Why did they need a SWAT team? Was she armed?
So here's the thing, is that they did, there was a lot of theories and hypothesizations, a completely made up word, spewed in the bus as they had basically a 6-hour bus ride right after the SWAT team shows up to their bus.
Can you imagine, though, like the gaggiest thing that ever happens, and then you have 6 hours in a moving vehicle to talk about it? That's the dream.
That is honestly what made the episode so brilliant, because these housewives were breaking it down in real time, almost as if they were doing it with the audience, like trying to figure out what the fuck went down. Clearly, production was involved in some way.
They were like, she's on the bus.
Yeah.
The production probably tipped off the FBI.
I mean, I think it's pretty clear the production tipped off. However, I think what the narrative is that Meredith Marks did it, thus securing her place as my number one housewife in this franchise and in my Housewives All-Stars cast, point blank, period.
The only thing I did see from this episode on Twitter was the clip of Meredith in the bathtub. Can you please explain what was going on there?
A crucial dichotomy. As the women are on this bus, all of them sobbing. I should say, you know, it is very funny, but all of their immediate reactions, with the exception of Jenny, who is iconic and stone-faced the whole time, they're all crying. They have a friend who has basically lied to them at the federal level, and it's revealed that their friend is...
I've lied to you at the federal level.
Yeah, one day, as the SWAT team breaks down my apartment door. They're all, like, very emotional with this experience and trying to figure out what the fuck is going on. Lisa calls all six of her lawyers in an iconic montage that is, like, in Housewives history. And meanwhile, Meredith Marks is drunk, toasted, in the bath. Like, a huge bubble bath, serving, honestly, me. I think she has, like, a glass of champagne, or if she doesn't, she should. And she waits in that bath for hours so that it is the way that she greets the women as they arrive to the vacation home that this 6-hour bus is going to.
Is she fully naked?
She is definitely fully naked. She might be wearing, like, a nude panty or something, like, for production. But the
garden panty. Venus.
Mary Cosby was not in the bus. She arrives ahead of time, as Meredith Marks has, like, drawn this long bath, obviously just for production purposes. And they sit and gossip about Jen Shah for so long that all the bubbles disintegrate. And so Meredith is, like, clutched in the corner of the bath nude, still trying to conceal herself and gossip about federal cases.
Okay, what I want to know is, in the pantheon of iconic unhinged Housewives moments, where does this stack up against, like, but now we've said it, Beverly Hills, Sheree pulling Kim Zolciak's wig off on Atlanta, and Scary Island from New York?
You know what? I thought about Scary Island and But Now We've Said It when I watched this episode. It has definitely one-upped the Sheree pulling off of the wig. It is definitely more enthralling and engaging than that episode. Compared to Scary Island,
nothing compares to Scary
Island. Nothing compares to Scary Island. However, it is definitely in that canon, definitely in top five. I don't know if you plan on watching it, but I do feel like you will be in.
I will definitely go watch these two episodes where this happened, but I think that's as much as I need to see.
Okay, TBD, TBD. I hope you enjoy the ride and then that you text me under penalty of death.
I absolutely will. Now that we have covered this week's pop culture happenings, let's talk about Red with Bo and Yang. I'm so excited now that we've talked about Taylor's version to really dig into how it has radicalized us as the Swifties we are today. Fran, you have named your stands the Fran base.
I have not. I have
That's
not personally.
That's really good.
And you have named yours the Rosebuds.
Well, they actually named themselves the Rosebuds.
Oh, I see, I see.
And I'm wondering if our guest has, our guest Bo and Yang, do your stands have names?
I don't think they do. I don't wish, I celebrate fan names. I just don't, if I think about people who like, identify as liking me, then that really freaks me out.
Well, it must be different for you because you're actually famous.
No. I already get too many DMs or tags where people will hashtag like Yang Gang at me, and I'm like, that's not for me. You guys know that.
I don't know what you're talking about. Yang Gang sounds perfect.
Stop.
And just rolls off the tongue, Bo.
It's honestly a very good hashtag. It's a very good like base name moniker.
We love a rhyme.
We love a rhyme, but like it just there's a lot of baggage that has nothing to do with me, yeah. And so therefore I don't want it. You know.
Well, today we want you to unpack that baggage. Okay. Also, if you couldn't tell. Today we're talking about Red.
Red.
What year was Red?
2012, October 22nd, 2012 it came out.
And
today is October 22nd. We're recording this.
Today is October 22nd. Crazy. Through the magic of recording, this episode is coming to you from the past.
Yes.
It is not actually live and happening as you listen to it. And we are recording it on the anniversary of Red's release.
Did you mean for that to happen?
Absolutely
not. No, we did not
this
plan this
incredible.
In any way.
Incredible.
And Taylor Swift, as we know, is a numerologist.
Yes. Famously into puzzles, Da Vinci Code-esque.
And we may not have known that this was happening, but she knew.
Yeah.
And all of us are Robert Langdon.
Yeah.
The main character in the Da Vinci Code.
Well, I might be... Who's the villain in the Da Vinci Code?
There's...
Is it Leonardo da Vinci?
It's Mary Magdalene.
She's okay, oh, yeah. I'm Mary Magdalene. That's right. I'm Mary Magdalene.
You are Mary Magdalene. Yeah.
You really are. You really are.
Bowen,
yes.
Tell us about Red.
Okay, so Red, it is one of the top albums.
Yeah. And this album is a top.
I think this album is like full true verse.
True verse.
I would say the lead singles are all tops, except for maybe Begin Again,
yeah,
which seems like a bottom anthem. Mm. Not an anthem, just a bottom sort of acoustic, plucky song. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Red is Taylor Swift's fourth studio album. It marked the inflection of her country roots, quote unquote, into this pop sound that many would say that she had always sort of tipped her way into.
She played with it.
Well, like, this was the first, like, declarative. I guess you could say that 1989 was, like, the first, like, she'd billed it as, like, her first true pop album.
Yeah.
But Red was, like, an album of many firsts.
It was the crossover.
This is when it started.
And it, you know, she comes out with We Are Never Getting Back Together, which becomes her first number one single.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know that either.
It's her first album with Max Martin songs, yeah,
and
Shellback songs.
And you can hear that.
Yes, you
and
can.
And you can hear that.
The maximalism.
Well,
I was talking to Rose about how this came in the era of music where every song sounded like a Pitbull song.
Yes.
It was like Gangnam Style.
Yes.
And this was also the era of dubstep, as you can hear on
I Knew You Were Trouble.
Yeah.
And... I think it was eventually beat by Folklore. It was her longest album with the most tracks.
Oh.
It is a long album a lot of tracks.
There are a lot of songs.
It's another kind of maximalism. There's the maximalism of Max Martin being involved, and there's a maximalism of like just the volume and the breadth of the songwriting.
And there is also, we could say, an emotional maximalism. Mm.
Sure. Mm. Wait. Go into this.
Happy, Confused, and Lonely.
Oh,
at the same time.
Yeah, because this is a very, well, this is a breakup album, you know?
It's a breakup album.
Oh, and it has, I think, some of her most emotive songs on it.
Yes. Absolutely. I think it's also the first time where people started to kind of notice this concept of the track five in Taylor Swift albums. And now it's like, I guess, sort of people vaguely know it, maybe. But like, it's typically her track fives on her albums are the most emotionally raw songs.
What are some of the other track fives?
All You Have to Do Is Stay was on 1989. Track five on Reputation was Delicate. Wow. Track five on Speak Now is, I think, Dear John. Like, and White Horse was on Fearless.
I love White Horse.
I can't believe how you are summoning this Swiftie out of me.
Look, so who else would we call into the studio? Yeah. We picked up our Swiftie phone and yes! we said, get and here the, right now.
And it was a red phone.
Yeah, it was a red phone.
And then I
sure.
said, also, you're in a crisis. I'm on my way.
Can we, what was the red thing with Taylor?
Okay, here we go.
What was that?
This is the red thing. This is my theory on the red thing. Around this time, there was an announcement that they were making a biopic about Joni Mitchell, Carly Simon, and Carole King. I think it was called, like, Girls Like Us or something. And the rumor was, and Taylor Swift was vying for the Joni Mitchell role.
I remember this.
And Joni Mitchell, years later, would say, I put a stop to that myself. I don't like her. I don't like Taylor. I disown Taylor. But I think Taylor has always held this musical torch for Joni, for obvious reasons. I mean, we all love Joni Mitchell. Yeah. Like, everyone loves Joni Mitchell. And I think, honestly, I think Taylor probably was like, I want to, like, transition out of this, like, teen-adjacent country pop style sound into something more, quote-unquote, adult or mature. And she probably saw Blue by Joni Mitchell as this, like, North Star, like, this is, like, I want to create an album that has this kind of, like, not monumental. I wouldn't say Blue is like monumental, but like there's this like I'm sure she wanted some like big legacy thing. Mm. Like she was going after like a future classic like Blue. Mm. And then Red is a very literal song about like synesthesia, whatever. But
why do all of these artists have synesthesia?
I'm so jealous.
I don't think it's real. Wait, am I going to get canceled?
But Taylor
for
doesn't
that?
Have synesthesia. Well, Lord is going to call the studio right now and be like, how dare you invisibilize me and my keyboard. Anyways, I feel like the big thing about Taylor, and I think the Joni Mitchell of it all is like her mode of like storytelling and like I think that like the way she kind of like put herself into a song and like I guess reveled in her contradictions.
Yeah.
Especially with this album was really nice.
Yes.
Like, I feel like before it was like quintessential girl next door. Just what, how old was she when she started 15?
She was 16? Like she was technically 16, like when the album released, but she was like, she started when she was like 14.
Right. And so in that, it's like, it was a lot of innocence. She was a little sassy. She had a funny sense of humor, but this was the album where she was just like, I came to fuck.
Yes.
And
yes.
These are all of my contradictions. It almost like was like a prequel to, I was going to say a prequel to a Reputation, but I'm not like.
Keep going. Yes, follow
because
that.
Because so much of it was like the anger of Red.
Yes.
And like the kind of, it was not like a sad breakup album. It wasn't like
it was angry. Here are my receipts.
It was vengeance.
Here are my receipts. Well, it is her first album where she acknowledges her fame.
Yeah.
Like, who's Taylor Swift anyway?
Yeah.
Like, or your record's much cooler than mine. Like, yeah. This is like her finally coming into some self-awareness, being like, I know who I am, who I am in this world, who I am to people. And like, I think, yes, that is a very astute observation. Also, just before I forget, like, one, I think the first time she, like, sings through another person's perspective, I think in Starlight, where she's, like, basically, like, singing about, like, being with, like, a Kennedy in, like, the 60s or something. Like, right. She's, like, traveling through time and, like, I think, and then, like, that ends up, like, being this thing that recurs in Folklore, where she's, like, different points of view. Like, let me sing through
Last
someone else's.
Last Great American Dynasty.
There you go. Like, it's period. It's period. Down.
Like one of my favorite songs on Folklore
yes.
is Last Great American Dynasty. Yep. Like I can be in my car like going hard to it. Uh-huh. I would snort a line of ketamine to Last Great American Dynasty.
Not that.
Yeah, I get it.
I mean I have snorted a line of ketamine and listened to Folklore.
Wait, that's we did beautiful. That upstate. We were in Big Bear?
Oh yeah, when we were in Big Bear, we did ketamine and listened to Folklore.
I'm so jealous.
Well, we're getting a cabin. What I want to know is when did your relationship with Taylor Swift begin?
Yeah.
It began with Red. Because I really? Did not care for her until this album.
Because Loving Her was red.
Loving Her was red.
Bro. Loving Her was product red.
Was product red.
Wait, that was like a decade before. I had the flip phone. Did you have the Motorola product red?
I guess I'm pro AIDS because I never bought a product red.
You are. You hate U2. Wait, who's the lead singer?
Bono.
Bono, right.
And there's a U2 connection too to Red. Oh my god!
Is there really? Okay, tell it.
Well, I just feel like State of Grace, the opening track.
Oh,
is like,
my god! It is my favorite.
It's my favorite. It's my favorite Taylor Swift song ever. And it that
sister, hold me, sister.
I feel so held by
it
you.
It is
right
when
now.
Okay when Spotify earlier this year did a thing where it was like gave you the
time machine.
It was like your most listened to artist and like the songs of theirs that you listen to the most. My list was number one, All Too Well, number two, State of Grace, and then number three was McCavity from the Cats.
Rose! Taylor Connection, she was in Cats.
That's cursed.
It was Taylor's McCavity.
Taylor's McCavity. Oh my god.
Okay, so going back to placing Bowen in time.
Yep.
And when the Red album came out, what was going on with you?
This is so amazing. We're recording in Midtown. I was working.
Beautiful Midtown.
Exotic Midtown.
Well, this was where I was at in my life. I just graduated college. I didn't know what to do. Like, I like basically threw my degree in the trash, my science degree in the trash. Didn't want to go to med school. This was a period of tumult in my life. And I was like, I'll figure it out in the city somehow. I'll just work temp jobs. I was working in a temp job on like 57th and Lexington.
Like so many girls have done before you.
Truly.
You're in a legacy.
But truly, like
a lineage.
Lunch breaks, you'd walk to like Sutton Place or whatever. Go to Essen and like just window shop at Bloomingdale's or something. Like that was like I didn't know back then, but I like definitely was depressed and like was going through such a rough patch in my life. Like really didn't know what the hell I was going to do. And like something happened around August when We Are Never Getting Back Together came out. And I was just like, oh my God, this is an incredible moment in my life that I am listening to this song and loving. Like there's something about. There was something finally exciting to me about Taylor Swift working with Max Martin. Because I knew who Max Martin was. Yeah. And I was just like, I think by that time, people like had an awareness of who he was, like on a larger scale.
It's when we kind of started to understand the producers who were behind these pop songs.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And like, it was just so thrilling to me. And we were never, something really, I don't know why I like cathected myself to this song. But I was like, I love this singer now. Mm-hmm. And then in the anticipation for the Red release, like, I would just go back and listen to her old stuff and found it, like, had an appreciation for that. But then, literally, it was she did promos on Good Morning America. She, like, released a promotional single, like, the 3 weeks before the album came out in October and September. And I think State of Grace was, like, the second one she released. And I listened to the snippet of it on the broadcast of Good Morning America. And I heard the soaring chorus, and I was like, what is she doing? This is going to be incredible. Yeah. And then the song comes out at midnight, and I listen to it, and I go, this is one of the best songs in the last, like, 5 years, like ever.
And
like,
that is still true today.
It's still true. It's a transcendent song.
It hits me. When I start listening to it, it, like, starts in my gut. And
yeah.
And then it works its way up in my chest and explodes out of me. There are car rides in Los Angeles where I will just listen to State of Grace on repeat.
The whole time.
Sister.
And this morning, when I was coming to the studio, there is nothing like walking to the subway in autumnal New York listening to State of Grace.
It's very autumn. It's very autumnal.
It's such an autumnal album. And the song, and, like, I was – and then I have, like, a gustatory association with this album, too, because it was, like – me walking on my lunch break around Midtown, clutching a pumpkin spice latte, listening to I Knew You Were Trouble, being like, this is fall. This is fall in New York.
This is fall.
It is.
She me holding now, my just salad.
She now owns fall. You know, I had a sort of similar experience of Taylor, but like slightly different because I, like, before Red, I really liked individual Taylor songs.
Yes.
Like, I was very into Our Song.
Yes.
and maybe like the rhythm of it or something.
Boom, 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 boom. So, yeah, country.
Rose, did you start with those albums or did you start with Red as well?
No, I started with those albums when she was first breaking out, but really it was song based and I was like not a Taylor Swift fan. And then when Red came out, that's when I was like, oh, I like Taylor Swift as an artist. And then 1989 is what radicalized me as a Swiftie.
1989 was what radicalized me as a Swiftie. I had moved to New York in 2013, a year after. So I actually didn't listen to the album in real time, surprising no one.
I respect it.
Thank you. Well, it wasn't
you got there
purpose.
Eventually.
I just, you know, it's a gap. It's a gap, like playing catch up culturally.
And
I turned 22 in 2013. And there is a song called 22 on this album.
Yes.
That is very good. And I was like, oh my God, I'm happy, free, confused, and lonely as well.
I think her as a 33-year-old, 32-year-old singing 22 to us, people in our 30s, I think we will connect. We will reconnect to it.
There's going
to
be a new layer to it. I think the same way with the Taylor's version of 15.
Yeah.
Like, there was this nostalgic aspect like grafted onto it because of the new lens she's singing it through.
Yep. And I think that is like 22 is like a really, it does manage to capture something about that time in your life. Mm-hmm. Even for her, is this like at that point she was some like millionaire like recording artist, still able to like, no, okay, how can I make this somewhat relatable? And that's like the story, that's the unifying theory of Taylor Swift, is that she is like constantly trying to shift the fulcrum on how to make herself relatable, but also keep her distance very calibrated. Mm-hmm. Like, I think 22 is a perfect example of that. And I do think, yes, like there will be a nostalgia grafted onto it when it comes out.
I think that's very true. And especially like what you were saying before about how this was the first time she grappled with her fame, because, you know, this album was released during like the pinnacle of hipster and like irony culture.
Oh my God, I forgot about that era.
And so I think
H slur.
Part of this album was her being like, I know I'm not cool, and that's fine. I'm gonna just like do this anyway.
And it's like a very interesting acknowledgement of like try hardness.
Yeah.
Like there's like that Anne Hathaway quality to
Taylor.
How dare. So
I mean that,
so
but
true.
I mean, you know, no, like, we love them.
I watched The Witches on my flight last yesterday.
Please. Oh, a rewatch.
The rewatch.
Say.
Yeah.
multiple rewatches. That's so true though. And I think that's something about like Taylor's ethos that has like always resonated with me and like the thing that I always like latch onto. And I say this to Rose all the time, but like, it's like my best and also like my worst quality that I try so hard. You know, like I think that's in a lot of.
And you've got so far, and in the end, it doesn't really matter.
Our age, and I love that there's this Gen Z Swiftie like group that like truly loves her, and like, they do make the discourse kind of fun, like very fun.
Rose's TikTok is exclusively Taylor Swift conspiracy
theories. it's Taylor Swift conspiracy theories about, you know, when she's releasing certain things.
Yes.
And it's always so funny to see them like the next day, and they're like, "Well, guess
we were wrong."
but also,
yeah,
but then they're like, "Here's how we might still not be wrong." Sometimes they're right, and then
follow
there's
and
like
subscribe for my follow up TikTok.
And then there's, you know, like Taylor Swift lesbian conspiracy theories.
Yes.
And then there's also the conspiracy theories about like the Taylor's version of it all. Like a friend was telling me about this theory about the re-records and why, like, sort of the way that they're being staggered out and why we're getting certain things before other things.
What's the theory?
And the theory is that she's releasing the albums that has the songs that gets licensed the most first,
that
to devalue the catalog enough that she can just buy it back and not have to re-record everything. Like,
so
that's why she started with
Fearless,
which has, you know, like
you belong
Love
with
Story,
me.
You Belong With Me, Red, you know, has like We're Never Ever Getting Back Together. She did Wildest Dreams when it was trending on TikTok.
Didn't she release the Love Story re-release when it was on that?
When it was
that,
in an
the commercial
ad.
For the yeah. Ryan Reynolds company, because they're friends or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
And even, and Wildest Dreams, like, first it was in that...
Horse movie.
The horse movie. and then it was a TikTok sound, so...
Ketamine Queen, Taylor
Ketamine
Swift.
Yeah. Queen. So I do see a lot of people on TikTok who are like, okay, let's get this song trending, so she has to release it.
That's so funny.
Speaking of ketamine.
Yes.
I feel like when I was listening to this and I was listening to that, like, aggressiveness and the anger, I do feel like a lot of this was a foray into, like, you know, bad Taylor. You know what I mean? She wants to be bad Taylor. And, like, I was looking through her, you know, history and career ahead of this podcast. Uh-huh. I was reading that when she was the opening set for, like, Rascal Flatts, which is one of her big breaks or whatever,
uh-huh.
because the person that they already had scheduled for the opening act played too loud and too long on his first set, and they fired him and hired Taylor Swift.
Whoa.
And someone from Rascal Flatts made a joke to Taylor, and I think she was like 14, 15 or whatever, made a joke to Taylor and said, you should send him a thank you for, like, your gold record, because
Whoa.
It's because you got fired that you
Fuck
have a
that.
Career or whatever. But she did. She sent a thank you letter to this guy that was fired.
No.
Anyways, I bring that up because bad Taylor has always been there.
And this was the first glimmers
yes.
of Reputation yeah. Taylor.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
So what did you think about, like, because, like, this is, for me, in cultural memory, this is when she did the Harry Styles impression on, what was it, the VMAs or the MTV Music
Right,
or
right,
because
right.
they dated briefly yeah. during the recording of this. I do think this is when I became more interested in
her
the persona
yes, yes.
of Taylor, because maybe because I was seeing a lot of people... Like, this was the time in my life where I was, like, really involved in the, like, underground queer art scene in Brooklyn. I was seeing a lot of people who were mining this for, like, performance art.
Like, earnestly.
Earnestly. Yeah. But also psychotically.
Of course. But it lends itself to that psychosis.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's why Swifties are a thing.
Yes, that's why Swifties are crazy. I love
Swifties
y'all.
Are crazy.
I'm among I'm, you. I, we're crazy people.
It's the one group I will never piss off. No. And I make sure to tweet about being a Swiftie, like, at least once a month, so that when I need them, they will be there.
And,
girl,
I have crossed the Swifties.
Wait,
really?
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about it.
Okay, yeah. Wait, do you want to go first?
Mine's, like, so embarrassing.
Mine's stupid, too.
I was working with Rose at the time at Out Magazine, and it was the year that Casey won, you know, Record of the Year
and all those
awards, and I was just so in love with her, and at the time, I was really angry with Taylor.
Sure.
I think for, you know, like, reasons that everyone else was, but also, like, maybe there's some unfoundedness just being angry, because there are a lot of celebrities that don't talk about Donald Trump, but she was one of the ones where I was just like, come on, girl, what are you doing? And anyways, we don't have to get into, like, the documentary of it all and how she reconciled that, but, like, I was very annoyed with Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
And so I posted a meme of I feel very innocent and funny meme of Casey Musgraves pushing Taylor Swift off a building.
I remember when you did that.
And it did go viral.
Uh-huh.
But, like, in a mixed reviews.
In a mixed reviews way.
And Swifties, they found me.
Sure.
And they found my DMs.
There was blood in the water.
They found my friends' DMs. They found my
boss. How did they get into
emailed
DMs?
I'm surprised they didn't find your social security number.
I know. I'm grateful. I'm grateful that I've survived.
This is the bad art friend thing where it's like, they can subpoena my mean text?
Yes.
Oh, no.
Yes. But it was a terrifying moment. I never deleted the tweet, so you can go ahead and reinvigorate this conversation.
I mean,
no,
that's a you thing. I'm a tweet deleter.
Yeah.
I don't know why I keep it archived.
Not above it.
But, you know, it was a part of, like, just that the fury, because at the time, I still was a Taylor Swift fan.
I think that's
why the disappointment was so strong.
You wouldn't care if you, yeah.
Yeah, and I remember hearing Matt Rogers talk about this, even like, you can be the most visceral Swiftie and still be so disappointed.
Of course.
But anyways, long story short, I survived. The Swifties did try to get me fired on many accounts. They emailed, like,
from out? From...
They've emailed all my boss, yeah. I know, as if, like, they could fire, as if, like, out would happen.
We're gonna fire you from being a a bitch about a pop star.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, excuse me?
Yeah, and they emailed all my, like, my podcast network.
Yeah, right.
Anyways, so what was your Swiftie?
My Swiftie story is similar. It was Election Day 2016. And I don't know if you remember, she was silent the whole election cycle, but she was busy trotting out celebrities on her tour. And then on Election Day, she posted a photo on Instagram of her waiting in line at the polls. Mm. And then I think I tweeted, I quote tweeted or I replied, I was like, too late, too little, too fucking late or something like that. Mm-hmm. Something so stupid. And then, of course, the Swifties saw it and then, like, tore into me. They didn't fucking go through my shit, though.
And dox you.
But I like, made the mistake of, like, replying to a lot of them and being like, you're literally 12. You do not step to this at
such
all.
Such a bad mistake to ever reply.
I know. It's such a miscalculation. I mean, I
didn't know then. We did not know.
I mean, I will say that, like, I think the Swifties need to own this, actually, because she is acknowledging it in, like, her interviews and her press that, like, yeah, I should have spoken up more during the election cycle, then, like, that's it. Like, you have to, like, Swifties have to, like, we all have to, like, own that. And I feel somewhat vindicated. And I'm sure, I don't know if you do too.
I felt very vindicated because she kind of just proved herself, like, wrong over and over again. And then she finally disavowed Trump hours before she released Lover.
Right,
and
right,
I was like,
right.
Girl.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
Right under the wire. But, like, I don't know. I feel differently about it now. But
of
like,
course, me too.
But, like, I feel like I remember when the worst song? The Me song? Me. And, like,
so I had to block it on Spotify so it wouldn't come up when I listened to Taylor.
I do miss Hey Kid, Spelling Is Fun. Anyway, keep going.
Hey Kid, Spelling Is Fun!
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. It
can't be.
And, but then when she did, like, the whole, the Pride video, the, like, kind of, like,
you
gay
need to calm
algorithm
down. Uh-huh.
Video where it's, like, Googled LGBTQ celebrities.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
then,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
asked
yeah,
me
yeah.
To filled it, whatever. And I remember tweeting about that and trying to nuance it and being like, what is this, like, opportunistic bullshit or whatever.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
I said it in a much more salient and incisive way.
Of course.
But, like, Taylor Swift fans would, like, they literally tweeted, like fucking faggot
yeah,
or whatever.
Of course.
Like, and then I would go to their, like, go to their bio, and the link in their bio would be, like, the equality, like, what was the equality fundraiser?
It was the Equality Act. It was,
yeah,
like,
the,
for
equality
the Equality
Act,
Act.
Linked to their fundraiser. The fundraiser was, like, in their bio calling me a faggot, and I was like, this is Swift.
There's no self-awareness.
No.
I think it is Swiftum, and also, this does radiate out to all of the stand-ups.
No, this,
Gaga
this,
stands do the same thing.
Barbs.
Doja, you know, stand.
It's like, just like they... They have to love their fave in a way that
destructive.
That is destructive and does not allow for nuance. Because, and I used to find this a lot as a Gaga stan, and you and I have talked about this before.
Yes.
You know, like, part of my, like, loving an artist is being critical of them.
Yes.
And it's unfortunate that especially a lot of these young stans feel like they have to love these pop stars who will never be perfect,
yes,
in a way in which they are always right about everything, mm-hmm, and they can never be critical about them at all.
Right.
And anyone who is must literally die.
Yeah.
Okay. That's so funny that you said that. I unfortunately searched Taylor on, like, my Twitter and I found this
no.
screenshot. Have you seen
Oh
this?
Yes, this is a classic Swiftie meme. Someone whose handle is at TaylorTS7 _ I want to kill myself. They tweeted, and then the person tweeted replying, "Wait till Lover drops, please. We can't lose sales." That's an iconic.
Yeah, well, and
exchange.
As is the Swiftie who went to prison because she refused to join the Israeli army.
I forgot about them.
My God. Well, then we obviously are on her.
Yeah, because this podcast supports BDS.
Yes. Comrade Swiftie.
Comrade Swiftie. There is an overlap between, like, just hardcore radical socialists and Swifties.
Well, yeah. I mean, Red.
Red, yes. Come on.
Red, the communist anthem.
Communist anthem.
She was letting us know all along with a little wink.
Or it's like the Log Cabin Republican anthem.
Maybe. Oh,
no,
sure.
I'm being facetious, but
you could be right. You could be right about it.
So how do you think Taylor changed after Red?
I think she changed in every way. Like, this is what I'm saying. Like, I think there was this line in the sand. People will say that it's 1989. I think, like, Red, I mean, so much has been said about how Taylor Swift is a very good, quote-unquote, business person as far as, like, laying out a strategy. But I do think this was a conscious choice for her to be like, let me do a transitional album. Let me not fully cross over yet. Let me, like, persuasively let everybody know that I can do the pop thing by releasing this album that is, like, a very carefully calibrated blend between, like, country and pop. Mm. And some, like, country purists will say, well, she was always pop. But I feel like this was, like, the album that she needed to put out in order to, like, get to the 1989 version of Taylor Swift. But she didn't sell out this, like, she didn't, like, half-ass the fact that this was a transitional album. She, like, really poured everything into it. Yeah. And I really think it's one of the best albums.
And where does it fall for you?
Okay.
On your ranking of Taylor Swift albums.
This is wild. I will say it's number two.
After
being edged out by Reputation.
No.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm shocked.
Wow.
Yeah.
I was not expecting. Yep.
I know. People, I know.
I need a second.
Everybody, hold on. I think Reputation, I listen back to and I go, this is the only album where I think she's making, like, an observation about society or about the world or about herself. Like, there's an observation that's, like, ingrained in the entire thing. Red is, like, this, like, beautiful maximalist thing of, like, let me try all of these things at once and it will work. And so that's why I like Red. We don't have to get too much into Reputation and why I love it. But I do fucking love that album.
I love it as well.
Despite hating it when it first came out, being like, this is crazy. Mm-hmm. This is
for
such
me,
a departure.
Of all the Taylor albums, like, besides Folklore, Reputation feels like the one that is the most lived in for me.
Yes, yes.
Like, it was such a... I spent so much time with it when it came out. It does not quite make it to the top of the list for me. And I want to know... Do you think, have Folklore and Evermore been out long enough for you to place them?
I think so.
Because I think I've gotten to that point as well only just recently.
Yeah.
And
but we talked about this. You're more of an Evermore girl.
No, I'm more of a Folklore girl.
Oh, God bless you.
And Folklore is my favorite Taylor Swift album.
Wow. Folklore is up there. The three are Reputation, Red, and Folklore, just like very closely orbiting each other.
Yeah, for me it's Folklore, Red, and 1989. Mm-hmm.
Very good.
Love 1989 so much.
Excellent album. I think Red and 1989 suffer this thing where they dip in the second half a little bit too much.
Mm. Sure.
Folklore is like virtuosic and like is she really stuck the landing on it. Yeah. And like what an incredible album. Reputation is like all killer, no filler to me. Truly no skips. And it's what, like 15 tracks? Like,
yeah.
And it says something about like, wow, like the only thing you have at the end of the day is yourself, even when you're someone like Taylor Swift and you have all, like, in, you know, you. Or like when people are fucking like trying to tear you down, like you have to have this like solid, solid sense of self in order to survive something that seems completely unprocessable. Like, I think, I don't know. This is so gross, but I listen to that album now and I think this is like this is the most astute meditation on fame that I have ever like really encountered, and like I'll relate to it in that way a little bit. Mm-hmm. But anyway, those are my three.
I also feel like her, like, the kind of thing that she was drawing into question with the album about like fame and like how we consume celebrity. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think that the critical response to Reputation and how people are kind of immediate like flop.
Yeah,
they kind of proved her right. You know
exactly,
what I mean?
Exactly. Oh my God, Fran. Right.
You know what I mean? Because like, I feel like when I listen to some, so 1989 was like my gateway drug into Taylor. Uh-huh. I guess technically 22, if I were to like metaphorize this, okay, 22 is like me having a little bit of weed in the backyard of somebody's like high school party. And then like in 1989 is like in the boom boom room and I'm like, I'm doing coke.
Yeah.
And so when 1989 come out.
Love that metaphor.
Yeah, thank you. Blank Space was like, I don't know if
goodbye.
I've ever,
yeah.
Have I ever listened to a song that many times in a row? I remember when the second the song came out, I was late to something, and I stood outside already like 15 minutes, like stood outside to like watch the video on my phone.
It was cataclysmic.
It really was.
And the thing about that video was the way she drew so much, even more. She's always been like drawn self-awareness into like her work, but that was a moment where she was like, this is the caricature of me, and I know you think it's funny, and I think it's funny too.
Yeah.
And that grew into like Reputation, you know what I mean?
I think Blank Space is when she reached the singularity.
Yeah.
When it was like, oh, everyone has heard this song and seen this video. And do you remember there was like a Grammy performance she did?
Acoustic. I was just about to bring this up. And it's such a good fucking performance.
Yeah. I was, okay, so I was actually talking about one of the earlier performances of Blank Space she did where she was like levitating and there was like fire.
Yes,
fire
and like there's magic around her. Yeah.
Wait, what performance are you talking about though?
I'm talking about the Grammy Museum where she's on the acoustic guitar.
Oh
is
my
that
God.
What you're talking
what,
about?
Well, that's also amazing.
Okay, I'm sorry. So we're talking about different things, but yeah.
Yeah, but let's talk about that because that performance of Wildest Dreams
on the electric guitar
gives me chills.
And so she had never sounded better. I think that's
never.
One of her top vocal performances.
Yeah.
Live
she
vocals.
Is a vocalist.
She is.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Without a doubt. And like, truly, like, I also just love the last full minute of 22. Sorry, I'm jumping all over the place. But the last full minute of 22 is just her belting her fucking tits off. Like, yeah. Like, just like, it's like 22. Like, just going crazy for a full minute. Like go back and listen to it. The last minute of this 4-minute long song, a quarter of this song, the last quarter of this song is her just wailing. Anyway,
so what do we think? Grammy performance, amazing. I don't know how much more I can say about it. It's just like so.
Yes.
It's so cathartic to watch, and it feels like a triumphant moment for her.
It's such a triumph,
and her in that like black turtleneck with the guitar, and she, her hair was
perfect.
So good. Speaking of her hair, was red when she got bangs.
Red was when she got was red
Holy
was when she
shit.
Yes, red was when she straightened her hair and then got bangs. Yes.
Oh my God. Wait, that is oh my gosh.
Yeah.
The ramifications.
Truly.
Of getting bangs and straightening your hair.
And she has had bangs ever since.
In the same time span where Joni Mitchell said, "You should fucking die." That was really hard. I mean, I'm kind of. Joni is like one of my be all end alls, and I'm really disappointed in her.
Well,
honestly,
it's
to be like
sure,
you but can I think say, I but don't I want think, her to play me, but you can't be like that girl fucking
sucks.
No, but I
which
think
is basically what
she did.
But like it does like play into the narrative of Taylor Swift, which is that even though she didn't get that like co-sign from Joni Mitchell
or Aretha,
red is still her blue, and
it is still her blue.
It is still her blue, and it is as I think impactful for people of our generation as blue probably was for people of that generation.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think so. I really think so. I mean, it's like blue, I would honestly say that like Control by SZA is like our generation's blue.
Ooh,
that's
that's really true.
But like red is just this like red is like epic. I don't think blue is like epic.
Yeah. No, blue
red
is very
like,
restrained.
Right. Yeah. Red is like expansive.
Yeah, but also like what Red does is like her songwriting has never been better.
Yeah.
Besides maybe like folk, I do think some of the songwriting on Folklore is
truly stunning,
like poetic.
Spectacular.
But some of my favorite, I think the way that she talked about herself and her relationships in the lyricism of it is incredible.
And she was literally like, even before she turned 22, 21 years old writing these songs.
Yeah.
Like writing a song like Treacherous where the structure is verse, mini chorus, verse, mini chorus, full like post chorus slash like bridge ish into like another mini chorus into like an even bigger post chorus. Like,
I love
really
Treacherous so much.
Did I say this already? It's an important album because it was important for Taylor in that it made Taylor like who she is now.
It's when she crystallized.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's
final
it.
Form.
Final form.
Charizard.
Sorry, I'm being self-referential. It's awful. But like, I did not care for, I was ambivalent about Taylor Swift until Red. And then something just clicked where I was like, I'm going to be obsessed with you for the rest of my life.
Well, you know, we've talked a lot today about how formative the album Red was.
Yes.
And we thought it would be fun to talk, you know, like, we talk a lot of, on this podcast about things that were really important to us in our childhoods.
Yes.
And how we, like, became the people we are. So we thought it would be fun to have you tell us about the Bo and Yang starter pack.
Okay. What are the items, the things in your arsenal as a kid that... you know, you either always needed to have around or define who you were.
This is a really perfect framework of a question, of a prompt. I will say random, like, a sampling. It's like, Let's Talk About Love by Celine Dion.
Love.
It's a Game Boy with, like, Kirby Tilt and Tumble and Pokemon Blue, Pokemon Crystal. And then, like, bagel bites from Costco.
Oh, you're a Costco girl.
Yeah, Costco girl. And then...
oh, right, you're a Costco then, girl. I saw the sketch.
Oh, yes, 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 of course. And then, how many items do people typically rattle off?
You're the first one
done
this game.
As many as I want. Those are the three pillars. Bagel bites, Game Boy, and Celine. But then, like, it's honestly, like, it was a lot of, like... me trying to, like, draw my own original anime characters and, like, having no one to show them to because it was, like, I knew it was a little too embarrassing.
Oh, my God.
Like, having some shame already built into, like, my work and my output is, like, truly, like, is like, since day one, like, a part of, like,
the way I work. It can't have been since day one. You had to have learned it at some point.
Drawing? Yeah, no, I love to draw.
No, I mean the shame.
The shame.
Oh, sure.
We're cultured into shame,
but, like... I would, like, draw stuff and then show it to people at school. And for a period of time, it was, like, cool that I could do this. And then it was, like – and then it would just literally be me, like, getting lost for hours just at my desk with, like, reams of paper that my dad would bring home from his office. And I would just draw characters, cut them out, put them in, like, a photo album – with, like, a plastic film, and I would just flip through it and, like, beat out a whole season of, like, some anime that would never get made in my head. But that was, like, that was, like, a writerly thing where it was, like, oh, I'm, like, this is storytelling, world building. Yeah, exactly.
Do you still draw?
No.
Okay, sorry to expose us, but did you know that Rose and I were also closeted childhood drawers?
We were, yeah.
Drew so much anime stuff, Greek mythology.
Uh-huh.
Like,
you know who else? Patty Harrison. I think there's like we all need to come out of the shadows with this
of our shame, our culture shame around drawing.
And make an adult cartoon series,
which no one's ever done.
But Fran is still a pretty good artist. He actually drew the mock up for our photo shoot, like cover art that we're doing.
Wait, show me. Okay, after.
My starter pack would be like Jagged Little Pill,
great
the album. It would be some book, and I'm gonna say right now, since it's spooky season, it would be Curses Incorporated, which is an anthology series of, like, modern spooky stories about a boy who, like, buys hexes online.
Oh, that's cool.
And then it would be the Afghan that my grandma knit me that I used to wrap around myself as a dress.
Oh my God.
I was like, I'm a girl. And I used to be Dorothy from The Wizard of Oz.
There you go.
I
love that.
Yeah.
Okay. Mine was definitely Hotel Paper by Michelle Brand.
Wow!
Checked out from the library. I didn't even own it.
Oh my God.
We're going to have to do a Michelle Branch episode.
Oh yeah, without a doubt. She was a big part of my secular awakening when I was like, I discovered that everyone else wasn't listening to, like, Christian rock. Reliant K, and it actually, people also listen to Michelle Branch.
Oh my God.
She's so important.
I didn't know you were a Christian rock person for a second.
I know the words to almost every single
Reliant K song?
Every single Reliant K song in their first five albums.
I've never talked to you about my Switchfoot phase in like middle school, high school.
I had a Switchfoot. Oh my God. Tell me more.
It was right after A Walk to Remember, when, like, they really were, like, big.
Talk about a crossover.
Mainstreaming. It was their red.
It was their red.
Want to remember was
their red. But then, you know,
which was red.
I was obsessed. I thought, you know, I thought the song 24, which is the last song off of that album, that like was like the best song that of song. All time.
I would sit and listen. Isn't it? And we were like 12.
12.
Like, one day I'll be 24 and this is going to be so meaningful. And then you turn 24 and you were like, Switchfoot sucks.
Which, I mean, like the fact that like we're like shitting on 24 by Switchfoot, but we're still
it's
like
beautiful
revering 22 by Taylor Swift. Yes. That is the power of Taylor.
That is the power of Taylor. Yeah, I mean, like 22, 24, 21.
Yes.
Is there, I don't know if there are any, I don't know. I'm trying to do numerology with no landing point. Anyways, also in my starter pack, Harvest Moon on N64.
Oh my God.
For sure. I loved like games without any conflict at all.
Yes.
Farming game, if you don't know it. I was an origami kid. Instead of having friends, I did origami.
I wanted to do origami.
I could make paper cranes really well.
So could I. I could make a lot of things.
I could
from
still
memory.
Make a paper crane today.
Really?
I had stacks of origami books, and I had an origami party, which is, it was really sad. I invited three of my crushes, and they all came.
That's cute. So you were into video games?
Yeah.
I don't. I don't like games of any kind
that's
at all.
Okay.
Yeah,
I respect it.
That's kind of surprising to me because you were so into like fantasy and sci-fi and so many things mm-hmm, that come mm-hmm. with the culture of gaming.
Yeah, but I like the actual story. I don't want to have to like play. I would rather read a book than play a game.
Sure. Mm-hmm. But now what I know some people do is they'll just watch a playthrough on like YouTube or they'll just watch the cutscenes of a game. So I might just start doing this now with like, I'm sorry, I haven't played The Last of Us, and I'm like, I need to know what this game is, yeah. And I need to, like, I might just, like, sit down and watch, like, an 8-hour playthrough. Anyway, sorry.
Why not?
Why not?
That sounds fun. Do you think Taylor games?
No.
Okay.
And that's okay.
Okay. Definitely not.
She's too disciplined. Taylor's
the girl that watches her boyfriend play video games. You know, that's, like, a whole, like,
yes.
Very
no, I think Joe's, like, in his dog crate with a Nintendo Switch, and Taylor is somewhere else.
Oh, I see. Yeah, it's to give the kid the thing.
His toy.
Yeah, the only other thing I could think of maybe that Rose and I have in common is Dallaire's Big Book of Greek Myths.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
that was
core. Oh, that's was not
definitely
cool
in the starter
one of the
pack.
First things that I started drawing. It's one of my first like sexual awakenings. I remember being horny for my own drawings.
Yes. Oh, my God. 100%. I would draw like naked dudes.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'd be like, oh, no. Is this this is going to be a problem?
Yeah,
right.
Like, also, I remember.
Wow.
Also in my starter pack would be Muppet Treasure Island, the movie.
Uh-huh. Ooh.
Ahead of it. And this is not like a specific action figure, but this is something that I used to do with my action figures. I might have told you this before. When I would get like an action figure as a gift for my birthday or for Hanukkah,
uh-huh.
I would open it up. You know, and be like, yay. And then that night, I would put it back in the packaging, tape it back up, and wrap it again so that I could open it again.
But good,
isn't
honestly,
that sick?
That's erotic. But, like,
because
as a kid,
for
you're
me,
just, like, so...
it wasn't about the thing itself. It was about the experience of, like, opening it and the thrill of that.
But honestly, like, very developed of you to, like, pinpoint that as, like, the thrilling moment, the moment of pleasure or whatever. And then you recreate that and restage that. Like, that is actually
But it was
brilliant.
Never the same. It was never the same
not,
when I did it.
Wow. I love that. Love. And I'm sitting with two Henson heads. You two both love the Muppets.
I do.
In a deep way. Muppets,
love Miss Piggy. Love Kermit. I had a Kermit stuffed animal that, like, I ran ragged.
Kermit's hot.
Kermit's hot.
Kermit is hot.
Yeah. Kermit is very hot. I'm doing the Kermit arms, listeners.
You can tweet us your takes on this week's episode. I'm actually really excited to know what y'all think of the podcast. Rose, are you excited, Rose?
Yes, but only if it's positive.
Okay, only
no
if it's
critiques.
Positive. I'm your co-host, Fran Tirado. You can find me at Fran Squishco on any social media you want.
I'm Rose Domu. You can find me at Rose Domu on Twitter and Instagram.
You can subscribe to Like a Virgin anywhere you listen to podcasts, and definitely leave us a review because it helps brand new podcasts quite a lot. Like a Virgin is an iHeartRadio production. Our producer is Phoebe Unter, with support from Lindsay Hoffman, Julian Weller, Jess Krainchich, and Nikki Etor. Until next week, see you later, Virgins.
Ciao. Our producer Phoebe has told us that our podcast is a Scorpio sun, Aquarius moon, Libra rising.
So do with that what you will.
Do with that what you will. Leave a comment if you have an opinion about it.